When I found out I was going to be a parent, I immediately felt a lot of anxiety and worry. So I went on to BetterHelp to try to look for a therapist to help me with that.
My relationship with my family and with my boyfriend and with myself were suffering. I really needed help.
I was ruminating a lot. Really getting those thoughts out to a therapist and getting feedback was just life-changing.
Discover what BetterHelp Online Therapy can do for you. Visit BetterHelp.com today.
You ever wonder if your routine is actually working or if you're just hoping it is? The Hume Band gives you real answers. It tracks your body 24/7, heart rate, sleep stages, recovery, stress, even blood oxygen, so you can see exactly how your habits impact your health. Not just steps, real data. You'll start to notice patterns, like how a bad night of sleep affects your recovery or how stress is holding you back. And instead of guessing what to fix, the app gives you clear, personalized insights based on your data, so you can stop second-guessing and start making smarter decisions for your body. Visit HumeHealth.com to get the Hume Band today.
I know how intimidating beekeeping can be, especially in those first couple of years, and not knowing what you need, what to do, or where to find help can be downright scary. That's why I created the AI-assisted Beekeeping for Newbies mobile app to be right there with you as you start your beekeeping journey. Loaded up with checklists, guides, and one of my favorites, a bunch of queen bee photos to help you get better at locating them during inspections. I created this app to provide you with a single source to help jumpstart your learning and make you a better beekeeper. Go to studio.com/beekeeper. That's studio.com/beekeeper to take advantage of a limited time 20% off launch special. Hey, everybody. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. Welcome to Beekeeping for Newbies. Thank you very, very much for taking the time to join us today. I certainly appreciate you. Happy Friday. I hope you guys are pumped up and ready to go into a strong weekend of hive inspections and all that. But as we wrap up an action-packed week of Varroa education, I want to do a quick recap here. So on Monday, we covered the high-level overview. And on Tuesday, we moved into reproduction, and we talked about how the Varroa mite has that tendency to prefer the drone brood. We went into some testing and confirmation methods on Wednesday so that you can do a mite wash and learn how to properly do that and figure out what your mite levels are going to be. Yesterday, we went into some treatment options, kind of a high level, but we covered some of the more popular ones. And today, we are rounding out the week with the newest thing in the Varroa management conversation. But first, let's talk about yesterday's hive inspection. So yesterday, we inspected colony number 69. This is a single deep 10-frame Langstroth. Entrance reducer is at the smallest setting. This is a Carniolan queen. And she was one of the other ones that came in with the original group on April 30th of this year as a package. Outside temp was 81 degrees Fahrenheit, 27 Celsius. Winds were calm and it was a beautiful sunny day. Again, this is still a no smoke used colony. As you know from the rest of the week here, you've heard me say that I have not been using smoke. I am by no stretch of the imagination telling anybody, don't use smoke. You shouldn't smoke your hives. I'm not saying that at all. What I tend to do is it's sort of like a little bit of an early thing that I personally like to do. It is not something that I would include in any educational kind of capacity to say the best way to assess anything early on is to use no smoke. Nope, not saying that. What I like to do is just for the heck of it, just to see what their general temperament is, recognizing that, of course, in a package of bees, that's not my queen's genetics. But I still just kind of like to not smoke them if I don't have to when the colony is really small like that. If you want to smoke and you are new, particularly if you are new, I strongly encourage it. And one of the reasons for that is because I am really slow. When I'm starting out with some of these colonies and they're brand new and I'm not using any smoke, I'm just taking my time. I'm moving slowly. A couple of them have the cloth inner cover, so I'm just peeling it back nice and slow. And, you know, I'm not in a hurry. I'm not making a mess. I'm not banging frames around or anything. As a new beekeeper who is fully protected head to toe and you got the gloves on and everything, it's a little bit more challenging, particularly on the glove side of things. I was putting on my gloves the other day just because I didn't know where they were. I had lost them forever. They were my favorite gloves. And where I still use gloves is really two situations. One of them is if I'm doing a lot of movement, just a lot of moving around, we're picking up colonies, we're loading them onto things, and there's a lot of activity. It's just better for me. I throw the gloves on. I don't have to worry about it. I don't have to stop to get a stinger out or anything. It's just easier. The other scenario, of course, is then when I'm working hands-free. I'm working without my hands. When I'm working without gloves, and then I do catch a couple of stings, then I go ahead and put the gloves on. These were my favorite gloves. I absolutely loved them. They had great protection in the hands. They had some ventilation up near the wrist and kind of into the forearm. And I was really happy with them. The problem is, and here's a tip for all of you, when buying gloves, I wear a large glove. I've got pretty good size hands. I would really recommend for probably most of them, I don't know that what every manufacturer, what size standards they use, but I can tell you as a guy who every glove I own is a large, the next set of gloves I buy will be a medium. Because you need as much dexterity as possible. And when you have gloves on that are too big, let's just say there's an extra half an inch at the end of the fingertips, that is just enough to take away your dexterity, make it really hard to grab a hold of frames and things, to squish bees very easily. Once you crush a bee, it's kind of on. Like they get that scent, they know something's wrong, and it gets a little bit wild sometimes. So you really want to do your best to not disrupt them by hurting any bees. And it's almost one of those things where it creates some, in some ways, having the gloves on almost creates more problems than it solves, but you still have to have them. And the reason I say it creates more problems than it solves is because if I go in barehanded and I put my fingers down on a frame and I feel a little bee under my finger, I just lift up a little bit and she walks away. They usually don't respond with a sting. They usually don't get aggressive with me just because I touched them. They're used to being touched. They're constantly in contact with each other all the time. So them making contact with other things doesn't usually bother them. But of course, your hands are there. And as these colonies get larger, this is kind of an important one. I'm completely off topic. I have no idea how this happened. But as these colonies get larger, they can get triggered a little bit easier. Because remember, it only takes one bee in the group to set off the alarm pheromone and to create a bit of a ruckus. Can you describe the ruckus? And of course, as the season progresses and as the colony is protecting and defending more, you know, certainly those probabilities of things happening that you may not like are going to go up a little bit. But being able to feel everything you're contacting within the hive has some real value to it. I'm going to rein myself in here before I get too far off track. But the whole thing is try and buy a size smaller. It might be a really good idea because a lot of the times, too, the material that those are made of might be some kind of an animal skin or a leather, and it will expand a little bit as you're using it. So going with a smaller size might be a bit better there. Now, this particular hive had a feeder in it. There was still some sugar syrup in it. They had not taken very much of that up at all. They clearly were happy with what they were receiving in the environment. And I went ahead and removed that. I dumped out all of the sugar that was in there. It probably was in there for 2 or 3 days longer than it needed to be, but we've had some cooler temps lately, so I really wasn't worried about that presenting any issues. After I removed that feeder, I went ahead and put 2 frames in its place, and these are just wooden frames, plastic foundation that I treated with the wax ball prior to putting them in. The queen was easily found. She was on a frame of new eggs, which was not a surprise to me at all. In fact, we had chatted about this in the Discord room, and I think that this is worth bringing up. The question was, when you're looking, you know, when you're looking for a queen, do you just kind of start on one end and work your way through the frames? I'm going to tell you that as you start doing inspections and as you start spending time in the hives, you're going to come up with a system that's going to work for you. And that's what I want you to do. In the meantime, what I do is I go and try to find open brood. I am looking for a space. It's usually one of two spaces. There is either an area where a lot of brood has emerged. And specifically, when you're looking at a frame of capped brood, the queen is going to lay in the center and then she'll do these elliptical kind of patterns around. And then what you'll start to see is the middle will become capped, and then the capped area will start to expand further and further across the entire frame. And right around the time that the whole thing is getting nice and filled up, Usually within a couple of days, you'll start to see bees emerging, new workers emerging from the middle. The queen then goes back to that space and relays, but not really immediately. So just because you see an opening in the center of a capped brood space, that doesn't mean the queen is immediately going back to that area, but that is a place you might be able to find her. My first target, though, is going to be any frame that is just open with no capped brood and there's just larvae and eggs. Where you see the eggs is most likely where she's going to be, because you got to figure she's going to lay an egg. 3 days later, it becomes a larva. So you've got a little window there of a couple of days. She's not going to start laying eggs on frame two and then run all the way to the other side of your hive and then go over to frame eight and then come all the way back to one. She's going to work wherever she is and wherever she can stay. So she's just a laying machine. She's looking cell by cell. Is there a space here? Is there a space here? Is there a space here? And she will just keep going. When she runs out, she'll wrap around the frame. Nothing on the other side. Okay, she'll jump over the next one. And she will just keep rolling right through. So typically, like I said, where you see eggs, that's where you're likely to see your queen. But she was plump, appeared to be very happy and healthy. And by the way, if you hear me say that she's plump, I'm not trying to like body shame her or anything like that. A queen bee, when she's a virgin, is very, very slender. And that is so that it is easier for her to fly. It is an incredible biological thing that honeybees have. But when she is unmated and a virgin queen, she'll be really thin and she will go out on her mating flight and she will be fully mated, come home and start laying eggs. And as she starts to lay, her body really kicks into overdrive, releasing all of those pheromones that drive the behavior of the colony. And she starts to enlarge and become physically larger. It's like 3 to 4 times. I mean, they can get really, really big sometimes. And I just love to see that. I think that it's just one of the coolest things in the world. And then if you didn't already know this, when it's time for them to swarm, the colony will then withhold food from her and they will basically force her to not be able to lay eggs. She needs to be nourished. She needs to be fed if she's going to be healthy and lay eggs. And if you compare this to the queen you see in a package of bees, like when you get package bees to your house or you get a queen shipped to you, that queen looks small. Why is this? Because that queen's not laying anymore. So when a queen is either not laying because she's caged or she is forced to not lay because her workers have determined it's time to swarm, she will then get smaller again. So you can have that big, plump, beautiful queen laying through your colony, having a great life and everything's going great. The colony says, all right, gal, it's time to do some swarm prep. They stop feeding her. She gets smaller and they fly away and it makes her nice and light to be able to fly again. What an incredible thing that is. But in the colony, back on the inspection, there's lots of brood in all phases of development. I did not see any drone brood yet within this colony, but there was plenty of nectar, pollen. They were putting things away very well. Lots of resources. Temperament was pretty good. I did have a couple that wanted to bounce off the veil, but definitely nothing out of the ordinary. And with that feeder out of the way, they now have some much needed space. They were a little bit constrained. They were drawing kind of closer to the edges, but now they're going to have a little bit more space to work with. I'm going to be doing a complete revamp in some way next week. I don't know exactly what I'm going to do right now. I was looking at it this morning. I was having my coffee out there with the bees, which I think that this is the first day that I've actually just sat down and had coffee with the bees. Like normally I look from a distance and I'm like, yeah, there they are. I got work to do. But today I was like, yeah, I got work to do. Too bad. We're watching some bees. And I did run the mower by them when I was cutting grass. So we did get to spend a little bit of time with me full throttle trying to get past them as quick as I could while grass cutting. But I was in shorts and a t-shirt and they didn't mess with me. Anyway, as I was observing them, I was counting and looking at things. And right here at my house, I think I've got about 20 frames that are just dirty. I need to put them into a tub and scrub them and get them nice and clean. And for those who have asked that question, you know, several times, like, hey, what do I do when I have some of these plastic frames that are a little bit funky? I usually get that like car tire scrubber. It's the one that I guess you could probably use it for toilets too, but it has the handle on it and then the brush below it. And it's probably maybe about 6 inches in total length. I throw a bunch of them in a tub, soapy water. I use that scrubber to just scrub everything completely off of that, spray them down with the hose, And then I will usually lean them against something outside with some sun, fresh air, whatever. And within a couple hours, they're dry. And then I treat them and put them back into whatever colony might need them. I've got about 20 of those here that are just dirty and gross and need to be cleaned up. And I also have another 20 that need to be assembled. What I'm trying to do basically is I'm kind of doing some math around making the drive to go get more hardware versus putting something together that I have here at the house. I have at least two, maybe three, five-frame nuke boxes, but I don't have a four-frame, and I have a four-frame colony that is completely packed. They are going to try to swarm on me very soon if I don't get aggressive with them. Part of me didn't get aggressive with them about 4 days ago when I first thought about this, because I'm trying to do things that you guys are going to see so that I can show you how I'm addressing them. And I thought, let's leave them really crowded. We have a really good flow right now. There are resources abundant all over the place. Maybe we'll just crowd them, let them make a queen cell, and then I will drop that queen cell into a two-frame nuke. And we will start another colony from the two-frame nuke, and we'll give them a frame of brood from somebody else maybe or something like that to really boost them up and get them packed in. And maybe we'll just leave them packed in the way they are and make the queen cell with them too. I don't know. We'll see what happens. I kind of held off on rushing them, but that is not the best practice. I'm doing this, again, to introduce things to cause potential problems so that when somebody tells you nukes can't swarm, and then you go, why did my nuke swarm? And I'm like, who told you that? And you're like, my mentor said that nukes can't swarm. And I say, well, after you poke your mentor in the forehead four or five times and yell at them for giving you bad information, it's things like that that kind of drive me nuts. But I'm going to do this specifically for that purpose, to create a little bit of a challenge. But I think what I'm going to do today is take a piece of plywood that I have laying around, and I'm not going to record this, and I'm not picking on anybody or trying to sound mean or anything, but I thought, oh, it'll be really handy and useful, like if I do videos when I'm improvising things or making things around the bee yard or whatever. I think it was like, I don't know, a week and a half or 2 weeks ago, I did a video on how I just made a migratory cover. I was like, hey, I need a migratory cover or some kind of cover on this beehive that I want to use. I don't have one. Let me just show you how I grabbed a few things from the yard that I have laying around, and a piece of wood here, piece of wood over there, and we're going to make a migratory cover. And like 100 people view it in 2 weeks. So I'm not going to video me making what I'm going to make, but I'm going to go ahead and take a piece of plywood. I'm going to run 3/4 inch by 3/4 inch all the way around it, leaving the front. I'll tell you what I'm also going to do on the front. I'm not going to put an entrance reducer on this. I'm going to put another section of 3/4 inch by 3/4 inch on both sides of the front and just leave about 1.5 inch opening in the front. That will serve as a fully functional bottom board with an entrance reducer integrated into it. And then I've got those 5-frame nukes I can drop on top. And then what I'll probably do is wait for the queen cell in that 4-frame nuke. And once I get that, then I will move the whole nuke into a larger double 5-frame stacked configuration. And I'll move the other frame over to the 2-frame nuke. And we'll see what kind of fun and games we can create with that.
A warning from Jace Medical. Even if the war stops, the shortages won't. Because ships move slowly, the U.S. has been running on oil that set sail months ago. But that buffer is running out. Asia is already feeling it. Europe is feeling it. Africa is feeling it. Demand is increasing as supply tightens, and it's what's been raising your power bill and gas prices. But those last ships to the U.S. just arrived, and even if things stabilize, the ripple effects will last much, much longer, because oil doesn't just power your car. It powers the systems that make and deliver your medications, and when supply slows, shortages begin. The difference between panic and peace is preparation with Jace. The Jace case is a doctor-prescribed emergency supply of essential medications and prescription antibiotics delivered right to your door so you're ready before you need it. No waiting, no scrambling, just control. Get your Jace case today at jace.com.
Okay, so now that I've met my rambling quota for the day, let's go ahead and jump into Norroa, N-O-R-R-O-A. So a lot of you have been asking some questions about this, and I've heard kind of some mixed things. A couple people have messaged me from what they've heard. A couple people have kind of reached out and said, hey, so-and-so at this club or from this entity gave us a little talk on it, and this is kind of what I gathered from it. And I figured I'm going to give you what I know, and you can kind of make the call from there and decide whether or not it might be a fit for you. But we'll run through, we'll talk a little bit about it, how it works. We'll talk about the same things we did, you know, with some of the other technologies, or I should say treatments that are being used. And we'll see if maybe it's a good fit for you or not. So let's start with the basics. The active ingredient is called Videscana. It is developed by a company called Greenlight Biosciences, and it has received EPA registration in September of last year, 2025. It's available through Manlake and other authorized distributors or resellers within the bee community. Now, here's what's kind of interesting with this, and it makes it very unique and really differentiates it from the way that everything we talked about yesterday does things. Everything that we talked about this week pretty much works by going after the mite and trying to directly kill the mite or disrupt them in some way, you know, after they're already on a bee. Noroa works through something called RNA interference, or RNAi. It targets a specific protein that the varroa mite needs to reproduce. It does not kill the mite outright. It stops the mite from producing viable offspring. So the hatched egg of the mite actually will consume the active ingredient through the brood food inside of the cell, and then it stops developing. So you are interrupting the reproductive cycle before the next generation ever gets started. There are no temperature restrictions on this at all. You can apply it at any time, doesn't really matter. And that's clearly a significant difference and maybe an advantage over something like Formic Pro, formic acid, which has some of that relatively kind of tight temperature window. The application is simple. It's going to come in a pouch containing a sugar syrup with the active ingredient already pre-mixed, pre-measured. Everything is taken care of for you. You're going to peel back the sticker to expose the perforations. Place it flat on the top of the frames or on the bottom board with about at least a half an inch or so of space to make sure the bees can access it, and then you're done. There's no special measuring, mixing, no vaporization, and the bees are going to empty that pouch within a couple of days. And once it's empty, the treatment is done and you can pull it out and toss it. Remember, it's going to be 2 pouches per brood box. So if you're running a double brood box config, you're going to need 4 pouches for this. We'll talk about some of the pricing on this later, but I wanted to give you a heads up on that. Oh, and I forgot to mention this the first time. If you do have a double brood, like a double deep brood chamber kind of setup, the manufacturer recommends to place the pouches, like 2 of them are going to be in between the 2 boxes using some kind of a feeder shim. So if you're not familiar with that, it would basically just be think of a deep hive body where you just cut about 1.5 or 2 inches off of it. That piece that's left over would be like a shim. It allows for a little bit of extra space in there. If you happen to have or have used like a slotted rack at some point in time, what you could do is just take out a couple of the center pieces of that and kind of stick that in the middle. I haven't actually tried that, but just thinking out loud, that might be something you have laying around that you could put in lieu of going and buying or making a separate feeder shim. Now, here's the critical thing you need to understand about Noroa, and this is where I think some of the mixed results that people are reporting might start to make sense a little bit. This is a preventative treatment, right? It's not a curative one. It works by maintaining the mite levels at the time of application. So if you go into a treatment with a high mite count, with a high mite load, and you're expecting Noroa to knock it all down, you're going to be a little disappointed. You're going to need to use other treatments first to get your mite levels under control, and then you can bring Noroa in as like a maintenance to kind of keep them there. So once you get those levels down nice and low, then you get the Noroa in. Now, with some early testing and field trials, they were showing up to 18 weeks of mite control from a single treatment. Colony survival in those trials was up to 75%, which is nearly double compared to leading chemical treatments in the same study. So that definitely sounds promising. Now, as it relates to honey supers, Noroa has a EPA tolerance exemption, which means that any residue that makes it into the honey up in that area is considered safe for human consumption. But that being said, the manufacturer still recommends treating with honey supers off just to make sure the bees are putting it where it needs to go, which is obviously as close as possible to the brood so that they can feed subsequent developing brood with that treatment chemical. As of right now, they are saying it is not a safety concern, so I would definitely have them off just to make sure until they have more data, or it's one of those things where it's completely safe today and then like next week, oh yeah, sorry about that kind of thing. Just take the supers off. I think it shouldn't be very long. Like I said, once they finish consuming the syrup, within, you know, a day, everything is put away wherever it needs to be and less likely to end up in your honey super, and you can certainly return them then. Now, I thought this was kind of interesting, and as I was doing a little bit of research and looking at things, I thought, okay, there might be a place here. We'll have to kind of see, but there might be a good fit for it. And then I was checking out the pricing. So for a two-pack, if you just want to get two of them for a single brood box, that's $22. If you are using a double deep config, you're going to need four, so it's now $44. And then from there, that's going to be your multiplier. It's $44 per hive per treatment. Again, figure out what's best for you, your budget, and all of those things. I'm just kind of thinking out loud here a little bit. Maybe that's one of those where it's the, you're coming up on the fall and you hit them with the formic, or you hit them with something heavy, you knock down the mites, you're at like 0 to 1, or maybe on a 300B mite wash, you've got 1 or 2, so you're like sub 1%. And then you give them this treatment like right before the winter. So you'd almost have to be doing this right before your winter bee ramp up. That's going to be your way to do it. So it's probably like ballpark, depending on where you are, it's probably like that August kind of thing. August, maybe mid-September, somewhere in that range is where you would hit them with this after you knock down the mites. And then you're getting that up to 18-week protection. So you're getting that protection during the entire winter buildup. It sounds like that might be a pretty good fit for this, a pretty good opportunity to kind of stay ahead of things. I don't think at that price point that I am anywhere remotely close to being interested, because again, it's $44 per hive. I mean, that's a lot of money if you're running a double deep. If you've got 10 colonies, you're dropping almost $500 on one round of treatment for all of them. But they do have a 12-pack that you can get here, and the 12-pack is $114, or you can get the 24-pack for $216. So buying in bulk is going to help you out a little bit. So a 24-pack gets you 6 colonies. If you have double deeps, it'll get you 6 colonies, 1 treatment. So like I said, I'm not going to replace my current active, treatment regimen, but we'll keep an eye on things over time, see how it works, see how effective it is. Maybe that price will come down, but it's not something that I'm going to be making any changes for anytime soon. All right, everybody, that is going to wrap up Varroa Week. By now, you should have a strong foundation as to what the mite is, how it reproduces, why drone brood is a preferred brood or a preferred place for female Varroa mites to go and reproduce. You know how to test, do your mite washes. You know about a few different treatment options that are out there. And my hope with all of this information over the past 5 days is that you're taking this really, really seriously. And I've said this a million times, and I'm going to keep, beating that war drum. You got to be aggressive with this mite. It will destroy your colonies. And again, if you want to play the game I did, because I'm telling you from my own personal experience where I did the, okay, whatever, and I got burned. And I definitely had some colonies that overwintered with no treatments. And I was like, yay, see, I told you I didn't need that. And then they collapsed within a month or two, like March, April, May, they're gone. They're dead. So please take it seriously. Now, in response to all of your feedback from last week, as you might remember on Monday, I think it was, I had said, hey, instead of going every day episodes through the entire month of May and the remainder of April, I'm going to, take responses from you guys. So whatever you guys sent to me, as you may recall, I had mentioned, put 30 days in the title, and I will take wherever you all see gaps, whatever you need help with, that's what we're going to do the next episodes on. So Monday, we're going to be talking about pests and predators. I had that as an episode idea, but there's a specific item within that that somebody asked me to cover. So we're going to talk about that on Monday. And then on Tuesday, we had an egregious violation of the agreed 30-day messaging concept idea where, you're supposed to come up with a idea, and somebody sent 4, which completely just broke all the rules. It broke the system. Everything fell apart. But we're actually going to cover all four of the things that that gentleman had included in his request, because that's it. Like, literally in the whole world, two people had a question or had some things that they'd like to see addressed. So what that tells me is that because we are at 206 episodes, we've literally covered everything and my work here is done. So best of luck to everybody. I wish you all the best. I'm going to take a vacation. No, I'm not leaving. I'm not really going anywhere, but I'm definitely going to take a little bit of a vacation, take a little bit of a pullback and have a break, because it sounds like you guys got a good handle on everything. So I'm going to take a little bit of time with my bees, do some inspections, build some bee hardware, assemble some frames, clean up a bunch of dirty bee stuff, get some bee stuff organized. So I may be a tiny bit absent after Tuesday, but it'll be nice to take a much needed break. And remember that with Varroa Week coming to an end, as all great things do, remember that your Varroa management journey is just beginning. So good luck and Godspeed. If you found any value in today's discussion, let's grab a cup of coffee together. Link is in the description. Take care, be kind to one another, and remember that I love you. And there's nothing you can do about it. Have a great weekend.
You ever wonder if your routine is actually working or if you're just hoping it is? The Hume Band gives you real answers. It tracks your body 24/7, heart rate, sleep stages, recovery, stress, even blood oxygen, so you can see exactly how your habits impact your health. Not just steps, real data. You'll start to notice patterns, like how a bad night of sleep affects your recovery or how stress is holding you back. And instead of guessing what to fix, the app gives you clear, personalized insights based on your data, so you can stop second-guessing and start making smarter decisions for your body. Visit HumeHealth.com to get the Hume Band today.
I know how intimidating beekeeping can be, especially in those first couple of years, and not knowing what you need, what to do, or where to find help can be downright scary. That's why I created the AI-assisted Beekeeping for Newbies mobile app to be right there with you as you start your beekeeping journey. Loaded up with checklists, guides, and one of my favorites, a bunch of queen bee photos to help you get better at locating them during inspections. I created this app to provide you with a single source to help jumpstart your learning and make you a better beekeeper. Go to studio.com/beekeeper. That's studio.com/beekeeper to take advantage of a limited time 20% off launch special.